A lady said to me, asked me this week, said, Pastor, how can I develop a good outlook on life? Last week, a lady was in my office, and she said, I've hit on some bad times, and I'm having a tough time not being bitter. Now, Pastor, what can I do that I might not be bitter? Some bad things have happened to me, and what can I do? How can I keep from getting bitter? How can I develop a good outlook on life? Okay. My husband left me. And that's sort of prevalent. It's not what you call prevalent, but it does happen in a church like this. I'd say once a month, somebody comes to me, says, Brother Hiles, my husband has just up and gone. And Brother Hiles, I have a hard time not being bitter. I sit in church, other ladies have their husbands there in church, and I have a hard time not being bitter. Or somebody said, Brother Hiles, why is it my child is sick? Why is it that my child has a serious illness? Or why is my child retarded? That doesn't seem right. I mean, what have I done to deserve it that my child is retarded? Here's a fellow who says, I can't find a good job, and I've got all kinds of bills to pay. Now, that doesn't seem fair. Other fellows have good jobs. It just seems like everything goes bad for me, and I'm getting bitter. And listen, you'd be amazed. You'd be amazed if you knew the percentage of the people in this room that constantly have to fight this matter of being bitter. You'd be shocked if you knew it. There are folks in this room now by the dozens and perhaps by the hundreds who are bordering on bitterness. God took my child. Why? God gave my child leukemia. Why? My husband is an alcoholic and doesn't come to church. Why? My wife is not a good wife or affectionate toward me. Why? My child is on dope and I've done the best I can to rear my children. And why? And my child was expelled from school because of something that he or she did. Well, why? And I'm having a hard time not being bitter. Sometimes bitter toward me. Sometimes bitter toward one of the staff members. Sometimes bitter toward the principals. But more often, bitter toward God for circumstances. Are you listening? I guess each of us, if we tried this morning, each of us could find a reason why he could be bitter. Wouldn't be any problem at all. If we tried, no problem whatsoever. One parent, somebody could say this morning, as I said a while ago, my child has gone bad. And I've tried, honestly, I've given it the first rate try. My child has gone bad. Or another could say, I didn't have a good home life when I was a child. Or I am a teenager and my parents are divorced. Then why is it that I come to church and my mom and dad could care less? Or maybe they're divorced and neither one of them wants me very much. And yet I envy these other young people that have parents who love them and care for them and supply their needs. And another says, I'm an orphan, and why couldn't I have had a home? And somebody else says, my child has cancer. Why couldn't my child be well like other children? Or somebody says, I have an unhappy marriage. Why couldn't my marriage be happy like others? Or somebody else says, I never married at all. Why couldn't I be happy and be married? Or somebody says, I am married. Why couldn't I have stayed unmarried? And so forth. The other day, Bruce Johnson told me, Donna, where are you, Donna? Bruce told me that you went with his brother Ted first. And I didn't know that the other day. But if you had a choice, why did you make the choice you did? And so I said to Bruce, I said, let me tell you the story. I said, Donna went with Bruce and she went with Ted. But Donna married Bruce. And Ted lived happily ever afterwards. And I just call him like I see him. Or somebody else says, why is everybody else well? And I'm not well. My body is weak, and I have this constant problem with my health. Why is it? Why did it happen to me? Or somebody else says, why is it that some folks have nice cars and live in good houses, and I live in an attic apartment somewhere? Why me? Now I'm saying this, folks. If we want to, there is not a single person in this room who could not become bitter if you try it. Every one of us could. Every one of us could. I could say this morning, if I wanted to say it, why wasn't my daddy a Christian man? Why did my dad not go to church? And why did my father and my mother separate? Why did my dad leave home? And why don't I have memories of we average about 2 houses a year, or apartments, or rooms a year. We moved about twice a year. Now, why don't I have memories of a dad who loved me? All of us could do that. Now, let me tell you something. Let me give you a key. And if you listen honest to Pete, I know it'll help you. In the first place, divide your life into 10 areas. I don't write this down, but I'll just give it to you. Give you an example. I'm not sure that this is the 10 you want to use, but it's 10 you could use. Get your piece of paper someday and write down the word parents. And next to that, write the word health. And next to that, write the word job. Next to that, write the word finances. Next to that, write the word church. Next to that, write the word children. Next to that, write the word marriage. Next to that, write the word friends. Next to that, write the word country. Next to that, write the word standard, the word standard of living. Now, look at those 10 and see how you do. And you will find, every one of you will find, every one of us will find, that we will make a passing grade on these 10 things. Now, here's a John Rice. John R. Rice. John R. Rice didn't have his mother died when he was 6. He had no mother at home. So, a negative there beside the parents. He has a negative there. But his health, his job, his finances, his church, his children, his marriage, his friends, his country, his living standard would all be good. Now, I don't know how you were. When I was in school, if I got 9 out of 10 right, if I got 6 out of 10 right, I wasn't disappointed. If I got 7 out of 10 right, I was pleased. If I got 8 out of 10 right, I was surprised. If I got 9 out of 10 right, I was shocked. If I got 10 out of 10 right, they gave me the wrong paperback. Now I'm saying, look, a fella can lead the National League in batting about 350, getting 3.5, if a fella gets 3 hits out of 10 times up, he'll bat over 300 and be in the top, one of the top batters in the entire National or American League. Now, look, ladies and gentlemen, you can't take one little sphere of your life and say, I've got it bad. I don't have the right kind of house. I wish I had a better house. And just look at that one little sphere of your life. That's what makes you bitter. You're looking at that one... Look, Brother Sully, you've got an arm missing. I don't know if you know it or not, but I noticed it this morning. And you got an arm missing. He has a wooden one, but he never wears it. He has, I think he ought to wear it. It goes good with his head. But I'm not saying he has a wooden head. I am saying he scratched it the other day and had splinters under his fingernails when he got through. But Brother Sully, if you wanted to, you could hold that stub up this morning and you could say, God's not good to me. See, I do not have a right arm and God's not good to me. Or you could say, I have 2 legs that carry me, and thank God for them, I could be crippled. I have 2 eyes, and though I wear glasses, I can at least see well with my eyes, and there are blind people sitting in this room this morning. And I can hear what the preacher's preaching. I can hear the music a while ago. I can hear the offertory, the prelude, the choir special. And some folks back here, dozens of them, could not. See? So, look at the whole picture. See, I mean your eyes, your face, your body, your legs, your arm, your shape. You ought to be bitter. Welcome home, Brother Sully. But don't you see what I'm saying? I'm saying we take one little area of our lives that is not at best, and we focus on it and look at it, and it makes us depressed and discouraged and sometimes bitter. What we ought to do is look at all the areas of our lives, and anybody in this room will find that you've got a passing grade. Now, that's the secret to it. The apostle said, I've learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. You learn it, and here's how you learn it. For example, Dr. Bill Rice, he and his wife, Kathy, had a little child that became deaf. Now, if they looked at the health of their children and just looked at it, but wait a minute. They had three other children who were well. They had a good ministry, a nice house, the blessings of God, lived in America. I'm saying that they could become bitter. And listen, you will if you focus your attention on the one spot that is weak. Dr. Jack Hudson, pastor down in Charlotte, North Carolina, good friend of mine. Jack Hudson has arthritis, one of the worst cases I've ever seen in my life. He cannot sleep in a bed most of the time. Now, Brother Colston sleeps in a bed most of the time. Most all the time. Brother Colston's been having trouble sleeping at nights. He sleeps good in the morning and fairly good in the afternoon, but he just tosses and tumbles all night long these days. And but Jack Hudson, Dr. Jack Hudson, cannot sleep much. And the pain is unbelievable. Now, he has bad health, but he's pastor of a good church. He lives in America. He can see. He can hear. And though he walks like this, sort of stooped over, he still can walk. He can eat. My, how he can eat. And I'm saying, if he looks at it, anybody who looks at that one or two areas will become bitter. But 9 out of 10 isn't bad. Here's a preacher. I know a preacher, a friend of mine. One of the finest, dearest friends I have. He had a daughter who was in love, was going to marry a fella, but she got pregnant before she married. Now, she married the fella, and a fine girl. She just was got in a position where she shouldn't have been, and had another daughter who did the same thing. Now, they're both married to the fathers of their children. They loved them before they married, and they made a mistake. But this preacher, it almost crushed him. You can imagine how it would crush him. But ladies and gentlemen, in the first place, if a child or one of your young people in your home with children makes a mistake, I mean a serious mistake, and you know how I feel. I stand up here, and I warn, and I warn, and I wave the flag. I wave the flag. And wave it and say, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But now, wait a minute. If they do, life is not over. Look at the whole picture. I know some people that have made mistakes, serious mistakes, who are having good, happy lives now and being useful for God. You can't look at that one little area and say, I'm ruined, I'm wrecked, I'm ruined. Even if your children turned out bad, you can't let that make you bitter. You've got to look at country. You've got to look at church. You've got to look at marriage. You've got to look at health. You've got to look at all these other areas of your life, or you'll get bitter. There's a lady whose husband leaves. And she gazes at that thing all the time. Just thinks about it and gazes. And then she looks around and she sees the ladies here whose husbands are here. And it upsets her because, why is mine... Did my marriage turn out like that? Well, you got to stop and realize that there may be a lady down the road from you whose husband sits beside her, but whose baby has leukemia, whereas your children are all well. You can't focus on that one area. You've got to look at life in one great picture and realize that 9 out of 10 is wonderful. And nobody has 10 out of 10. Nobody. Job said that man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Everybody is. Nobody has 10 out of 10. And the fact that one area of your life did not turn out right, you're foolish to look at it all the time. And major, and major, and major. In God's name, get a hold of yourself and look at the whole picture. List these things. I guess she could, if she wanted to, Maxine Jeffries. Could say, why didn't I ever marry? I can tell her. It's breath. But she could. Now, Maxine, look. Max, how old are you? How old? 46. Is that old? Max is 46. Now, what does a 46-year-old woman do? Men, you know what they do. Nothing. They sit at home, read the paper, watch the television, and nothing do they do all day long. Everybody knows that. Women are all that way. The house cleans itself. Little angels come in and cook the meals and wash the dishes. Everybody knows that. But now, wait a minute. Maxine Jeffries is the age where she could have grandchildren on her knee. She could be enjoying, like some of you folks at 36, taking care and wiping snotty noses and changing dirty diapers and enjoying your grandchildren. But she could say, well, why? But Maxine Jeffries doesn't do that. She takes that one area of her life and she says, maybe it could have been that I could have had a husband and children and grandchildren and a happy home. But she can't live like that. She's got to stop and think that in the area of health, I'm strong enough to get about. And in the area of my friends, I have people that love me and that love me like they love their own family. And I know that. And she's got to say, I have a job. And that job pays me enough to get along. I have a nice place to live. I have good food. I have America. I have a good church. She can't dwell on that, the fact that she's never married. And you can't either, folks. You just can't do it. You're going to have to quit. And some of you folks come for counseling, and you're dear, sweet, precious people, but you, all you're doing is just focusing on that one little area. And you never look at anything else. Here's a couple in college. And all the wife can look at is, I seldom get to see him. All she look at. She doesn't stop to realize that there are hundreds of women in this house this morning who would give their eye teeth if their husband was gone all the time. I could stop right there. The reason I stopped there is I saw so many folks smiling when I said that. Women all over the place. Blessed thought. But I mean, look, there are ladies in this room. If they got to wash the clothes and cook the meal for a man of God, for someone who was giving his life for God's work full time, they'd be the happiest they've ever been in their lives. You've got to realize you can't focus on that. You've got to realize that there is another area over here besides that area. I don't get to see him much. 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 You're at home. I never see him. I never see him. I never see him. You pray at night. Lord, let me see him. Lord, let me see him. Lord, let me see him. He comes in, you nag at him. That's why he took that fourth bus route. That's why he's taking 64 hours a semester at Hiles Anderson College. That's why he's taking as well as 5 courses in the Bible. He's taking home economics and piano lessons and everything else. But look, you've got to watch the... Look, you maybe you're in the will of God. Your family's in God's will. Here's the lady across the street. Her husband comes in at 6 o'clock every night and has Saturday and Sunday off. They could care less about God's will. And their children will grow up and go to hell one of these days. Whereas God has given you. In most of the areas of your life, God has been good to you. 9 out of 10 isn't bad. Let's go another thing. 9 out of 10 isn't bad concerning friends. Sit down. If you're a little bit on the outs with somebody this morning, somebody you're peeved at, sit down and write on a piece of paper all the things that you agree with that person on. And over here, write all the things that you don't agree with that person on. And you'll get back with your friend. You know, it's an amazing thing. Little Claire, I never understood this. Somebody can be a friend with somebody for 10 years, and everything's fine. Now, how many things can you enjoy together in 10 years? Suppose there's one a day. That's 3,650 things you enjoy in 10 years' time. And one time, that friend disappoints you. I'll never speak to him again as long as I live, and you are a fool. I can understand that. Look at the whole picture. I was at Brother Vineyard this week for two days. And I was talking to him. And he made a statement in his sermon. He said, Brother Howes and I didn't always agree when I was with him, but we always got along. And I got thinking about it, and I told him. I said, oh, come on, brother. He said, I used to go in and tell him every time I disagreed. Well, he didn't do that. Because we didn't disagree that much. One time in 4.5 years did I ever have to even come close to scolding Jim Vineyard. He's a self-motivated man. Good night. One time in 4.5 years. Dr. Streeter, you and I disagreed one time. He came to my office, hit the desk. It's about a student in one of our schools. And he said, Preacher, it wasn't right. And I said, Doc, you're wrong. And Doc said, Preacher, you're wrong. Of course, time proved me right. But I'm saying, though, that look, I do not have a dearer friend. Dr. Streeter was, before he went back to medical school, he was an assistant pastor for me here. A lot of you folks don't know that. But Dr. Cal Streeter was once my assistant pastor here. One of the dearest friends I've ever had on the face of this earth. There's nothing he wouldn't do for me. That's why he does nothing for me. But really, I mean that. Look, folks, I was thinking this morning about Joe Boyd. One of the best friends I have on the face of the earth is Joe Boyd. I've known him since I was a little kid. He was my hero when I was a kid. He was an All-American football player. He was All-City, All-State, All-Conference, All-American. I was All-Shot. And he was one of my heroes. He's preached 9 revival campaigns for me in my churches. We've gone soul winning hundreds of times together. We have laughed together. We have cried together. One time in those years, we had a fuss. We did not fight. Because I did not feel led to fight. At 6'4", 235, not me, buddy. My mama didn't read no dumb kids. That is, male kids. But look, I know people have one falling out, and for a lifetime they won't speak. That's not the way to live. Good night. Look at your friends with whom you may disagree in an area or two, but list all the areas and list all the good times you've enjoyed together and list all the experiences you've had together and list all the things you've done for and with each other and look at all of it and you'll find 9 out of 10 is not bad. Same thing is true concerning success or failure. Please listen to this. So you failed. So you have had a tragic failure. A lady came to me and said, Brother Hiles, my boy, you broke my heart. I failed. Brother Hiles, we didn't get to this church in time, and I didn't know all the things I know now. And I tried, but I didn't know how to relate to my boy. Brother Hiles, we got here, he was a teenager, and I tried, but it turned out bad. Brother Hiles, I can't teach a Sunday school class with my boy out yonder drinking. I can't teach a Sunday school class with my boy out yonder on dope. How can I stand up and teach my Sunday school class like a long-haired hippie boy out yonder in deep sin? How can I do it? I'll tell you how you can do it. You've got to look at every area of your life. It may be you failed in one area, but 9 out of 10 isn't bad. 8 out of 10. Isn't bad. And by the way, little lady, if you did fail miserably in the rearing of that boy, that's why you ought to keep that Sunday school class. You got to make up for your failure. But there are people who will fail in one area, and because that they look at it and look at it and look at it and look at it, and because of it, they do not even try, and it affects their entire lives. Listen to me. There is not a person in this room this morning to whom this preacher looks down. Not a one. I know you're not perfect. I knew that before I became your preacher, and I found it was confirmed after I became your preacher. I know you're not perfect. When I look at you, I do not see somebody who failed in rearing a boy. I see one of my members who basically is a good person, whom I love and admire and appreciate. If I look at somebody who's gone in the deep sin and come out of it and ask God to forgive them, when I see you in the hallway of the church, I don't say, there's the one that was in deep sin. Not on your life. So you failed, young person, to stay clean. So you failed. You had a dream that you'd please Brother Hiles and your parents someday and walk down the aisle clean and pure. Okay, that's what I want for. That's the thing I want for you more than any other single thing outside salvation and the will of God for your life. But okay, you blew it. Time of weakness and a moment of temptation, you blew it. Okay. Many a fellow's been knocked down in the first round and got back up and won the fight. Many a person has been on the mat for the count of 9 and gotten back up and won the fight. Look at the whole 15 rounds. Look, look, folks. You know the best way in the world to play a bad round of golf? I'm not a golfer. Used to be. Well, putting it loosely. But my problem is, my golf balls were no good. No good at all. My golf balls love tall grass and water. I could play golf if there was a lake there, my ball would always find it. If there was a winding stream, my ball would always find it. I could spit on the course and the ball would drop in the spit. I'm no golfer. But I know this. Here's the guy. He's playing golf. And so, four. Yeah, not only four down where I'm shooting, but four back here and four over there. You heard about the fella that's teeing off on the golf course? And the fella said, look, you're teeing off 3 feet too far. This is the place you're supposed to tee off. And the guy said, shut up, this is my second shot. So, here's what happens. I took an 8 on that last hole as a par 3. Oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Oh, if I'd have just done better. Oh, I know what I did wrong. I should turn my hand over like that. And while you're playing the next hole, your mind's on the last hole. What do? You blow the whole round because you got your mind on that one bad hole. And there are people in life's game who played one bad hole. But you think about it, and you think about it, and you think about it, and what it does, it ruins every other area of your life. Paul said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. How did he learn it? He looked at life as an entire picture. Different areas, not focused. Look, Paul wasn't married. Paul had no children. Paul had no home life. Paul had no house to call his own. Paul could have said, in my life, it's been pretty tough. All this travel and no wife and no family and no children and no house and no home. Been pretty tough. But he didn't look at it that way. Paul took all of his life and laid the whole thing out. His health, the will of God, his country, his freedom, his food, everything, and laid it out. And Paul said, I'm content. I learned to be content. So, in business, you failed. You go bankrupt. And you got to have a tough time financially. Okay, so that's not one of your good points. A failure. But 9 out of 10 isn't bad. Maybe you failed as a wife, or a husband, or a father, or a mother. Maybe you failed. Maybe your dear mother's in heaven right now, and you failed her. You were a bad son or a bad daughter, and your mother's gone. There's no way in the world that you can make amends for it. Okay, so there's something you could focus on and think about it and think about it and dream about it and wreck your life. Or you could say, with the grace of God, God's good to me. And though I have made a, maybe you fail as a husband or wife, but you could still be a good mother. And you can still be a good Sunday school teacher. And you can still be a good bus worker. Or you can still be a good choir member. Or you can still be a good usher. Or you can still be a good custodian. Don't you see what I'm saying? Last night at deacon's meeting, I recommended to our people that we pay a salary to one of our mission men who drives our van. Not a big salary. I think 30 cents a week. But we voted to pay. And the deacons were enthusiastic about it. I'll tell you, it's Jim Cunningham. And one of the fellows said, is that the happy little short fellow? Yes, sir. One deacon said, is that the fellow sort of a clean-cut looking fellow? I said, no. But now, wait a minute. That man was a preacher. That man went to Tennessee Temple College. That man, for I think 9 years, was an evangelist. He went into sin. He got drunk once. He got on the bottle. Became an alcoholic. Got married, divorced, married, divorced, married, divorced. And his whole life was messed up. Well, you might say that, unless you stop and realize, though I've been a failure in one area, I'm not going to let that cause me to be a failure in every other area. I'm going to find those areas in my life where I still have opportunity to succeed. Because 9 out of 10 isn't really bad. And by the way, you might do the same thing about people that you don't like. List all the points of a person. It may be that only 1 out of 10 is causing you not to like him. It may be that he's a good fella. You see, we relate everything to how people treat us. Everybody in the world, a fella can treat everybody in the world right and treat me wrong. He's a bad guy. Or he can treat everybody in the world wrong, treat me right, and he's a good guy. We're so prone to relate whether they like or dislike somebody, we're so prone to relate that only with what he has done for me. And by the way, that's lately too. You say, people often ask me, how do you love your enemies? Because they don't think my enemies are bad people. You mean a fella can curse you and you don't think he's bad? I mean that. Maybe the fellow loves most everybody else. And 9 out of 10 isn't bad. Folks, sit up and listen for 2 minutes and I'm through. You just pass through one time. That's all. You don't come back again to this life. You pass through one time. Now it's up to you whether you're happy or not. Oh, you say the circumstances. Everybody's got circumstances because they come unhappy. Guy right here could be unhappy because some parents don't understand when they have to spank their children or expel them from school. This guy here could be unhappy because all the problems in the bus ministry. The Sully could be unhappy because of his heart condition or loss of an arm. The Ray could be unhappy because of Mabel. It depends on how you look at it. So why don't you this morning, why don't you take everybody that you don't like and list all the points about them? You'll find they'll pass. And why don't you take all the successes and failures in your life and list them? And you'll find you'll pass unless you keep focusing on that one. And you list all the circumstances of your life. And every one of you will find one that's negative and one that could drive you to bitterness and despair if you let it. But I'll guarantee you, If you'll take your whole life, look at your cupboard, look at your car, look at your house, look at your health, look at your children, look at your family, look at your church, look at your freedom, look at your clothing, look at your circumstances, look at your standard of living, and look at it all. Though you'll find in every case a dark place or two in that great sphere or circle, every person in this room will end every day of his life saying, "Glory to God. Hallelujah." And then you can say with the Apostle Paul, "I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content." Our Heavenly Father bless you.